Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show we speak to the souls that made things happen. I'm Barry Strom, your host. I'll be doing the channeling tonight, and I hope you are all having a wonderful Easter holiday.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host, and I would also like to welcome you to our show, as well as I hope that you all had a wonderful Easter. Tonight, we're going to interview three souls that were directly involved with the resurrection of Jesus. We'll start with Mary Magdalene, who observed the crucifixion and was the first to see Jesus after the resurrection. We will then channel with Paul, a Roman Pharisee that participated in the persecution of Christians. And finally, we will speak with Peter, and he will address how the disciples reacted to Jesus after he resurrected and appeared to them. In our last show, we channeled three of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, and George Washington. We ask questions about their opinions concerning our current government. I highly recommend that you check it out. Their common sense recommendations may be the only answer to correcting the problems in our political system today. If you missed the show, it's on YouTube in the name of Barry Strom and has over 590 videos now. We're currently consolidating all of our audio broadcasts on a new platform named podbean.com. Just go to the site and enter channelinghistory.podbean.com. Downloads are very easy and there's no charge.
Now we're going to do a short disclaimer. Opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits, do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parex Network, or of our sponsors. So before we channel, we always say a prayer of protection as well. So Connie will say the prayer, and then we will begin to channel with these amazing guests that we have with us tonight.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God.
Now Mary Magdalene and Mary Mother of Jesus were the only individuals that worship both the crucifixion and Jesus after the resurrection. So Mary Magdalene, we really thank you for returning and speaking with us again. And thank you for answering some of our questions. So Connie, this is going to be a very interesting evening. So let's get started.
Okay, yes, thank you, Mary, for coming back for us. What did you believe about Jesus telling the disciples that he would return to them?
We really didn't know what to believe. Some of us thought that he would simply return to life. Some thought that it would be back, that we would greet him in the heaven that he taught us about. He spoke that we would all be joining him in heaven. But he also said, and he never got into great detail about it, that he would return to us, and that we would truly realize that he was special. None of us really understood. This had never taken place before. There had never been an individual actually rising from the grave and returning in full body form so that we could speak to him, that we could hold him, that we could touch him. There's much uncertainty. When the Romans killed him, we thought that we had lost him and that we would not see him again until we returned to the heaven of which he spoke. We were greatly surprised, and it was truly a miracle.
Could you explain why none of the male disciples attended the crucifixion?
Jesus told them that they needed to assure that they would not be killed by the Romans. After the trial of Jesus, we knew that almost anything could happen. We discussed it and decided that the women would be safe, especially the mother of Jesus himself, and that I would accompany her. The Romans were not that familiar with my role as one of the disciples. So we felt that it would be safe for the two of us to go to this terrible event. Jesus wanted to make sure that as many of his disciples as possible could carry on his words. He felt that the Romans could possibly arrest any of the disciples, male disciples, that knew of me. They felt that the women were safe, but they knew that the men would be in jeopardy. So he had told them that if anything happened to them, that they should remain safe and put themselves in a position that they could continue to speak his words to others.
Did you accompany Joseph of Arimathea to the tomb?
Yes. Mary and I accompanied them. It was a terrible thing. Generally, the Romans would let the bodies remain on the cross and let them rot until they fell off. Joseph of Arimathea had many friends, many Jewish friends, and many Roman friends. And he convinced them that Jesus should be able to be taken down from the cross, and that the risk of leaving him on the cross could possibly create riots among those that were followers of him. So the Romans removed the body of our Lord, and we carried his body to the tomb. We placed him on a flat rock that was in the tomb. First, we laid down a linen cloth. We laid him upon that. The Romans were very impatient, so we did not do much more preparation. We took the cloth and we covered him from head to foot, and we left because the Romans wanted to seal the tomb. They were very, very fearful that his followers would try to steal the body, and they were under orders that that was not to take place.
Would you please describe the events when you returned to the tomb to properly prepare his body?
We knew we received permission from the Romans that they would unseal the tomb and allow us to properly prepare the body for eternity. You see, we did not have many practices, but we did know that we wanted to cleanse the body. We wanted to wrap it in cloth and linen, and we wanted to assure that it was as clean as possible. The tomb would be the resting place of Jesus, and we wanted his body to be prepared according to our rituals.
Would you please describe the events when you returned to the tomb to properly prepare his body?
When we returned to the tomb, the rock that had sealed the tomb was rolled away. The Roman soldiers there were furious. The body was not in the tomb, they told us. We asked them how that could be, and they said they did not know, but they did know that the body was not there and there were no signs of it. They felt that the followers had somehow or other removed the body, but there was no way that they could think because there had been soldiers on duty outside. They had stood watch over the tomb so that the seal could not be broken. They said that when they removed the rock that acted as it said, the seal was still intact, yet the body was gone. It was a great mystery to them. We were emotionally destroyed by the fact that we could not prepare the body of our Lord. We felt that the Romans had removed the body and had perhaps even destroyed it, that we would never see it again. We went back and we told the rest of the disciples that the tomb was empty. I asked if any of them had done anything, and they said absolutely not, that they had not in any way disturbed the body of our Lord. It was a great mystery to all. None of us could figure out how anything like this would ever take place.
Would you describe the tomb of Jesus for us?
It was very simple. In the area, there were small caves, and these caves, in some instances, would be enlarged. They were very simple places. There was always a flat stone where the body was placed in these tombs. And they were just simply small caves. There were always stones, large stones that would be rolled in front of the tombs. And in many instances, you would never even know that there was something behind the stone.
Is the Shroud of Turin the linen that you placed over the body of Jesus?
Yes. The shroud is definitely what was placed over the body of our Lord. We did not have time to change anything. We would have, if our Lord had still been in the tomb, we would have taken the dirty linen and destroyed it. But when we arrived in the tomb, it was the only thing that was there. But the shroud that people see today is the linen cover of Jesus.
So what happened to the shroud when you left? Where did it end up?
We took the shroud because it was the only thing that remained, the only evidence that our Lord had ever even been in the tomb. We took it back and we folded it carefully and we put it into a container that would protect it from the weather. At that time, we thought that that was the only evidence that we truly had of the remainder of our Lord.
How did the disciples react when you informed them the body of Jesus was missing from the tomb?
They blamed the Romans. They said that this was the only thing that, the only way that the body could have been taken away. They said that they would try to speak to the Romans. They would speak to the Pharisees, see if they had done it. But they were convinced that the only way that that body had been removed was either by the Jewish priests or by the Romans themselves.
How many days after the crucifixion did Jesus appear to you?
It was on the second day that we returned to the tomb. And it was 2 days later that Jesus appeared to me. So it would have been the fourth day after the crucifixion.
Would you describe that event of Jesus appearing to you for us?
It was the most incredible event that I could ever imagine. I was in the woods. I was trying to pray. I was asking God to show me the way on what to do. And I heard this voice behind me. And it said, "Mary, I am here." I looked around, and there I could see our Lord standing near me. He said, "Do not touch me because I am still not completely." He said that I am of light and that I should not touch him. But he assured me that it was truly our Lord. He said, "You must go forth and tell others that I have arisen from the grave, that I am no longer in physical form, but that my soul is now resurrected, and that I am truly here as a miracle. Tell the other disciples that you have seen me, and tell them that I will visit them as well in the future."
Did he give you any other instructions for the disciples?
He said, "Tell them that what I have told them is coming true, that I have returned. Tell them that I will speak with them, and then tell them that when I am finished, my soul will return to heaven of which I spoke."
How did the disciples react to you telling them that Jesus had appeared to you?
They thought that I was hallucinating. They said that there was no way that they could see our Lord. They were aware that he had died on the cross and that his body had been placed in the tomb. Many of them thought that I was ill, that I was seeing things. There were some that thought that perhaps my mental illness had returned. There were some that thought that since Jesus had saved me of my mental illness, when he passed, that his energies could no longer maintain my health. They thought many things because they had never heard such words spoken before.
That is true. Did you ever see Jesus again?
I was in the group when he appeared to the disciples several days later. I did not speak with him because he simply had messages for all of them. He knew that Thomas was doubting, so he allowed Thomas to come and touch him. He told the disciples that the most important thing that they could do would be to pass on the words that he spoke to others. He said that now his physical life was over and that he would be joining his Father in heaven. We still did not realize that he was God incarnate. We did not know that until we actually returned to heaven. But he spoke of love. He said, do not hate the Romans for what they've done, but go forth and spread the words that I spoke.
What do you think is the real message for humans concerning the resurrection?
There are many messages from the resurrections. One is the powerful energy of God that can do miracles beyond the comprehension. Another way of looking at the resurrection is that it is a new beginning. From the time of the resurrection, the life of Jesus took a different direction. Now he was a spirit. Now he was the result. His presence was the result of the greatest miracle that ever took place. After the resurrection, Jesus had a new beginning. And I think the message that he wanted to portray was that every human can have a new beginning in their life. Every human can start fresh, following God's words. Every human can put behind them their past and can do good into the future. I think that the concept of a new beginning ties in very nicely to the concept of the resurrection.
I totally agree with that. Do you have a final message for us, Mary?
Yes. I hope that all of you have had a solemn and contemplative Easter holiday. The trend for all of the holidays, the religious holidays, is to pull away from the words of God. The trend today is to sell as much as you can, to make as much money from a holiday. People are trying to take Christ out of Easter, out of Christmas. They're trying to convince people that God does not exist, that you do not have to speak of him. They're taking the religious rites away from individuals, the politicians. They know that God, the words of God, speak of honesty and integrity and are contrary to the actions of many of your politicians. Many of the people in power understand that it is only the teachings of God, the teachings of honesty and faith, that lead many people in the proper direction in their lives. If you can destroy religion, you can destroy the concept that people need to do well in their lives, and that they need to not harm others, that they need to love, that they need to coexist. You see, many of the teachings of our Lord are contrary to individuals of great authority. They know that people of faith have a foundation in their lives which will allow them to resist many of the teachings of power and greed and great wealth. People have to be very strong today. They have to truly understand the words of our Lord, and they have to follow them. They need to not do anything to anyone else that they do not want done to themselves. They need to know that coexistence is the only way that humans can advance. They have to understand that there are many dangers in the world today, and the only way that victory will ever overcome these dangers is for them to follow the words of God. So I thank you for allowing me to speak. I hope that people will leave Christ in Christmas, and that they will understand that there's much more to Easter than fancy colored eggs and rabbits. So thank you so much for allowing me to come through on this blessed day. I know that I will be returning to speak with you at other times. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary. We know it's impossible for any of us to feel the incredible range of emotions that you went through at that time. Next, we're going to speak with Paul the Apostle. He never met Jesus in life and was actually a Pharisee that persecuted Christians. Paul, thank you for returning to us as well. Would you explain to her exactly what a Pharisee was?
It was a type of Jewish priest. We followed the wording of the Old Testament. We were very, very strict in not varying from those words. We did try to lead the Jewish population. There were competing forces in the Jewish church at the time, but generally we adhered very strictly to the words of Moses and of the ancients. We got along well with the Romans. We worked with them, and we tried to do what we could to avoid riots and violence among the Jewish population against the Romans.
So why did the Pharisees fear Christians?
The Christians believed differently from what the members of the Jewish religion believed at the time. We followed the words of the Old Testament. The Christians were following the words of an individual. The group of which I was a member feared that Jesus would become literally the king of the Jews, and that that would undercut the powers and the abilities that we had to work with the Romans. We thought that if individuals became Christians, most of them would be leaving the Jewish faith, and that that would undercut our powers.
So was that why the Pharisees wanted Jesus dead?
Yes. The high leaders of the Pharisees feared that the Christians would literally make Jesus their leader and political king. Herod also, as king, wanted the title of King of the Jews for his sons. There were many reasons why people feared Jesus. They knew that he had these special powers, and he knew that there were the multitudes being drawn to him. There were also people that were so attached to his teachings that they were willing to die to follow this man. He had great powers, and nobody truly understood what he wanted. So the Romans and the Pharisees basically felt much more secure if Jesus was dead.
Did you know anything else about Jesus?
I had never met him. I had heard what people said about him. They said that he had healed others, that he had performed miracles, that he had even brought back people from the dead. No one had ever been spoken of in this way that I was aware of. This man was drawing many, many people to him. I was not part of the decision makers that had him crucified, but I had only heard of many of the actions that he had done.
Did you participate in any way with the persecution of Christians?
Yes. I had served in areas where Christians were stoned to death. There were many people that were so convinced in the abilities of this man that they would speak against the church, the Jewish church. They would speak against the Romans. We felt that these people had the ability to formulate riots and violence. And I was not a high-ranking Pharisee, but I was present when Christians were stoned to death.
Was Stephen the first martyr of Christianity, and did you participate in his stoning?
I think that you are referring to what the Catholic Church now calls St. Stephen.
Yes.
He was a very, very strong individual. He spoke of Jesus, of his miracles. He spoke of the one God of which Jesus spoke. And the Pharisees ordered that he was killed, that he was stoned to death. I was present at his stoning. I did not throw any of the stones that killed him, but I was helping to formulate the event. I brought people to his stoning, and I guess it could be said that I truly did participate in the event.
What did you think when you first saw Jesus?
I was on the road to Damascus, and we were supposed to apprehend Christians in that town that were speaking against the Jewish faith. All of a sudden, this figure appeared to me on the road in front of me. He was surrounded in light, and he resembled what I had been told Jesus appeared to look like. He was an amazing image. I had never seen anything like it. He had appeared out of nowhere, and I had no idea. I thought perhaps he had jumped out in front of me. But all of a sudden, I felt this incredible energy that was surrounding this person. He spoke to me, and the only thing I could think of was that this was somehow or other the ghost of the individual that had just been crucified.
What did he say to you?
He referred to me by name. He said, "Saul, I want you to know that on this day you are witnessing a miracle." He said, "I want you to tell others that you have truly seen me. I want you to speak to others, and I want you to tell them that I have risen from the grave, that no matter how violent the attempt to silence me, I and my followers will continue to speak of the one God. I would like you to join my disciples. I would like you to speak my words, and I would like you to understand the truth of the one God.
It's written that you were blinded. How were you affected by seeing him?
I could not believe what was taking place. There was light around him, but it was not so bright as it blinded me. I did fall on my knees before him because as he was speaking, I truly understood that this was the man that had died on the cross. He showed me his wounds. There was no doubt of what I was seeing. It took me several days of meditation and contemplation to truly understand what was taking place. I knew that I needed to change my life, that I had seen something very, very special. I understood exactly what he was trying to tell me. I felt guilt over what I had done in the past, and I truly wanted to do my best in order to serve this individual, this miracle that had taken place in front of me.
What do you see as the true meaning of the resurrection?
I looked at at this form that appeared in front of me, and as I thought in the days that were to come, I thought that I had participated in something that only the greatest of prophets would have ever participated in the past. I did not truly understand why I was chosen, but I understood that the resurrection, and we did not necessarily refer to it as that in those days, but the miracle that I witnessed of this individual coming from the grave was proof that anything was possible. I think that the resurrection was done for individuals to understand the true miracles of God. I think that the concept of which Mary spoke, that it was a new beginning, because at the time of the resurrections, all of the things that we understood about religion changed. Now we understood that God could basically create the greatest of miracles and have his son reappear in physical form. But I believe that the image of the resurrection being a time of new beginnings is probably the best way to think of it.
Yes. How were you treated by the disciples when you went to them?
They did not trust me. They knew that I had been a Pharisee and they knew of my past. But when I told them all of the things that I had seen and what the image of Jesus had told me and how his words corresponded with the words that he spoke to them in life, Jesus had appeared to Mary at this time, and Mary had told them of the miracle that she had seen. And eventually, they realized that I was truly wanting to serve this man, and they gradually accepted me. I worked at that, bringing Jewish converts into the religion, and that was something that I believe that I was very good at. The other disciples worked in other areas, but they gradually accepted me.
What was the true reason that Jesus appeared to you?
I think that he wanted to prove forgiveness. I had done many things for which I needed forgiveness in my past. I think that he chose me as the ultimate sign that you can be forgiven for many of the things that you've done in your life for which you regret. Assuming that you dedicate your life your future life to following his words and to serving him. So I think that my major message is true forgiveness.
Since you never knew Jesus while he was alive, how did you learn his messages so that you could spread his words?
I worked with the other disciples, and they told me many of the things of which he spoke. But mostly I told the individuals that I met with of the miracle that I had seen.
Okay. When you converted to Christianity, I assume you quit your role as a Pharisee. How do you explain that the Pharisees did not have you executed as well? They have to have been very angry.
They were indeed. The fact, I told them what I saw, and many of them were amazed by my words. I told them that I needed to follow another path, but that I meant them no harm. And I told them that I would travel to other areas, so that I would not be a problem to them in the future. But I told them that this was truly something that I was not going to change my mind. They reacted very negatively, but since I told them that I would do nothing to create political problems or problems for them, I think that if I had tried to bring groups of violence to them, that they would have had me killed, but I was true to my words.
Thank you, Paul, for sharing your story with us. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes. God chose me. He chose me, a sinner. I had done things in my past. I had hurt Christians. I had done many things that I was ordered to do. I was a true believer in the Jewish faith. I think that God uses me as an example that anyone can be forgiven. It took an extreme act. The act of me seeing the resurrected Jesus in human form after I knew that he had been persecuted and killed on the cross. I did as much as I could upon seeing his form. I went forth, I told others, I wrote notes that would become part of the gospel. I did many, many things to advance his teachings and his words upon me witnessing the miracle. I know that many of you listening will never see such a miracle as I saw. I was truly blessed. I had served God in previous lifetimes, and I had been sent back for a mission. The image of Jesus in front of me on that day changed my life. I want each of you to know that the simple belief in his words can change your life as well. The fact that you are hearing the three of us today is a miracle. I hope that some of you will listen to these words that we speak and be transformed by them. Live a good life. Love others, coexist, teach the young about God and Jesus. Do what you can to live a perfect life. No life is perfect. Put your past behind you. That is gone. You have no control over the past, but you have total control over the future. Follow the words of God through every day that you live from this time forward, and you will be so much happier, you will not fear death, and you will truly be living a life of which you can be proud. So thank you for allowing me to speak. And I know that Peter is waiting to speak as well. Okay, thank you, Paul. We're going to speak with the disciple Peter, the leader of the disciples. So, Peter, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, I always enjoy your visits, Peter. Jesus confided with you more than any of the other disciples. What did he tell you was going to happen?
He told me that there was going to be a time that I would be taken by the Romans. He told me that there was a time in the near future that I would no longer, that he would no longer be available to lead us. He told me that as I had tried to lead the group while Jesus lived, that I would have to try to continue that leadership without his guidance. He said that he would be put to a violent death. He said that he would return to us. I thought that he was referring to the heaven of which he spoke. I did not truly realize what was happening. Things started taking place as he had predicted. The Romans killed him on the cross, and I truly thought he was taken permanently away from us.
Did he ever tell you that he was God incarnate?
No. He always said that he was the Son of God. He did not want to be confused with any of the Roman gods. The Romans would proclaim themselves gods. The emperors would do that. He did not want to compete with the Roman gods. He knew that if the Romans thought that he was impersonating one of their gods, that he would be immediately put to death. He knew that there were things that he could do. He never spoke against the Roman government. He never spoke of overthrowing them. He never tried to create riots or do things of violence against the government, because he knew that that was an act that would bring him a rapid ending. But he always knew that something would take place that would have the Romans put him to death.
It's written in the Gospels that you told the Romans that you did not know Jesus. Is that true?
Sadly, that is true. During his trial, we attempted to go and to listen, but the Romans were going through the crowd and they were looking for individuals that had followed him. They were looking for individuals that would, shall we say, continue his dynasty. They came up to me and they asked me, "Do you know this man that we have on trial?" They tried to pretend that they were looking for witnesses that would speak in his favor. But I feared that they would capture me and put me to death. So I told them that, "No, I do not know this man." When I did that, it is a sign that all of us have great weaknesses. We must try to overcome those weaknesses. But I did indeed tell them that I did not know our Lord.
Yeah. Did Jesus tell you not to attend the crucifixion?
Yes. He told us that there would be a time that we would be required to carry on his words. He told us that we should not put ourselves in danger. He told us that the Romans would put him to death and that they would attempt to kill those that followed him. So he told us that we must be very careful and that we should not do anything to put us in harm's way, that it was our responsibility and it was up to us to carry on his words.
What did Jesus tell you about him returning to you?
He told us all that we would be joining him in heaven when our time came that we passed from this earth. He told us about heaven. And then he said that he would return to us. We did not have any idea of what he was speaking. No one had ever returned from the grave. So we felt that the only time that we would be speaking to him again would be when we died and went to heaven to join him.
What did Jesus tell you about heaven?
He told us that it was the most miraculous place and that we would all go there and we would all be reunited together. He said that it was not anything to fear, that death was actually the beginning of the time that we would all be together again. He told us that heaven would be what we wanted it to be, that it was a place that we would simply be joining him, that we could move about, that we would speak to our loved ones that had gone before. Bear in mind that there were many concepts, modern concepts, that he did not use to describe heaven that are used today. So basically, he kept his words very simple, but he spoke of it as a paradise, a place of the opulence that we knew, but we knew it was this incredible place, but we had no idea how great it was until we got here.
So, Peter, what did you think when Mary told you that she saw Jesus?
I thought that her illness had returned. I thought that perhaps only the presence of Jesus was what was keeping her healthy. I said that there was no way that she could see what she saw. I actually spoke against her and told others that that she could not in any way have seen the physical presence of our Lord. I knew that he had died on the cross, and I knew she was under great grief, and I thought that that grief had affected her mind.
How did you react when Paul told you that he saw Jesus and wanted to join in spreading his words?
I didn't trust him. I knew he was a Pharisee. I thought that they were sending him to us to find out who we were. I thought that he was working for the Romans. But he was so emotional about what he saw. He spoke of things. He spoke of seeing the wounds of our Lord. He spoke of things that he truly had to see. It took us a while, but we gradually accepted it. And he proved to be one of the best apostles in spreading the words of our Lord.
Did Jesus give you instructions about how to carry on after his death?
Yes, he said that we must go to all areas of the known world and that we must speak of his words, that we must build churches, that we must bring people into those churches, and that we must promote future leaders, people that were capable of carrying on and telling of his words. He wanted us to create a church in Rome, which was then the capital of the empire. He wanted us not to alienate the Romans. He knew that we would be persecuted by them. He knew that we would have to do many things in secrecy. But he wanted us to simply do all that we could to bring people to understand the words that he spoke.
What was your opinion of the actions of Judas? And did that opinion change after you returned to heaven?
On that night in the Mount of Olives, we did not truly understand what Judas had done. We thought that perhaps he knew that the Romans would take him away and that he was giving him a final kiss or hug. When it dawned on us, when the Romans crucified our Lord, Judas became overwrought, emotional. He hated himself for doing what he did. We thought that we gradually understood that he had pointed out our Lord to the Romans and that he had accepted money for it. We chastised him and threw him out of the group, but we did no violence to him. He took his own life. When I returned to heaven, I understood that he had actually played an important role in pointing himself out to the Romans. His life plan required that he led the Romans to our Lord. You see, Jesus knew that he had to be taken by the Romans and that he had to be put to death. And he did not want the Romans taking other individuals than himself. He knew that we had to persevere in spreading his words. So Judas actually did what he was commanded to by God. He did not realize it at the time, and God allowed him to take his own life so that he could return and find out what had truly taken place.
Did Christ die on the cross for the sins of man?
No, he did not die on the cross for the sins of man. He died on the cross so that he could be resurrected. He died on the cross so that his death would be remembered. He died on the cross so that everyone that heard of his passing would remember it. Jesus knew that his death had to be very violent for the people to remember what was taking place. He knew that the resurrection had to take place. He did not die for the sins of man. Each individual has free will and makes their own decision. And if they decide to live a foul life, then they are responsible for it. Many say that he did do this thing, this dying for the sins of individuals, but that is truly not why he died upon the cross.
The teachings of the Roman Catholic Church attribute the founding of the church to you. What do you have to say about that?
That was not my role at the time. I was trying to create a church that would pass on the words of our Lord. We had to basically work with the Jews. We had to work with the Romans. But we did what we could do. I did not intentionally formulate the church that was to come, that was to become the Roman Catholic Church.
The Catholic Church, as well as other organized religions, are losing membership. What can the Catholic Church do to regain membership?
They must return to the simplicity of the teachings of Jesus. The sacraments of many of the churches have become so complicated and detailed that it is driving people out of the churches. When a church becomes the only instrument of allowing an individual to go to heaven, they are not following God's words. Every individual will go to heaven. How they are judged depends upon their free will. The Catholic Church has many sacraments and uses fear to bring people to the church. Any church that helps use fear is not following God's words.
What is your opinion of the message of the resurrection?
I share what those that have spoken before me say, that it is a time of rebirth. The resurrection is proof of the powers of God. God can do anything that he wishes. He has incredible powers that we will never understand until we return to heaven. The resurrection is the greatest miracle that ever take place, and it is the greatest example of the powers of God. But Jesus resurrected to prove that you can have a new beginning in your life.
Many people are turning away from other organized religions. What would you tell us about that trend?
I would tell you that many religions do not follow the true teachings of Jesus. Many are simply interested in raising money and having power and doing many of the things of which Jesus spoke against. Loving God, knowing the importance of coexistence, doing what you need to do to spread his words. Those are all the simple things of God. Many churches have turned away. Every individual goes to heaven, and any church that tells you otherwise is not telling you the truth. What happens to your soul in heaven depends on your free will. But any church that tells you that you must rely upon them is not telling you the words of God.
Thank you, Peter, for another great interview. Did you have a final message for us?
Yes. Use these Easter holidays and Christmas holidays as times of contemplation on how you are going to follow the words of our Lord. Know the simplicity of his words. Love one another. Follow the golden rule. Do not harm others. Do not lie. Show integrity. Coexist with others. Know that all men are created equal. There are many, many simple things that will lead you to a truly wonderful judgment when you return to heaven. Do not do things as opposed. If you have great wealth, share it with others. Help others. Know that death is the beginning, though it is not the end of a life, but the beginning of another one. Your soul goes to heaven and you get another life plan, and you have the opportunity to return and learn the lessons that you do to it that are necessary to advance in the realms of heaven. So thank you once again for allowing me to come through. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate your visiting.
Okay, next week we're going to discuss what's taking place in the world today, with three United States presidents that face similar circumstances. First, we'll speak with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was president as Hitler came to power, and Putin is very similar to Hitler. Then we will speak with Ronald Reagan, president during the downfall of the Soviet Union, and Dwight Eisenhower, the president that served at the beginning of the Vietnam War. This should be incredibly interesting. Connie and I started a new podcast. It's called Hello Heaven. We broadcast it on YouTube, Facebook Live, Fridays at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. The audio is available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple, anywhere you would like to listen.
I'd like to thank you all for joining us tonight on Channeling History. This week we tried to help you celebrate Easter by giving you a better understanding of the crucifixion and the resurrection. We always try to bring you the truth about history by speaking to the souls that lived the events. It's the only by understanding the events of the past that we can prepare properly for the future.
Okay, so thank you very much for listening. Please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.